you're getting to see a lot of
Pepo Files. We're at Sunset Station in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Hotel Casino. And, of course, the second annual Crash Retrieval Conference is wrapping up here. Been quite a pretty interesting conference, right, Robert Farrell?
Yes, it has been.
And you got a great book here. I want to talk to you about the AN Log here in just a minute. But first of all, what's your overall impressions of the conference in general?
Well,
What really turned you on?
Well, I've been to a number of conferences, and this is no exception. There's a lot of good information presented here, very factual, well-researched information. I guess the only thing that's I find striking in going to all these conferences is that the lecturers who are armed with all this information are preaching to the choir, and that's why I wrote my book.
And let's get into that A and Log. What do you mean by preaching to the choir? I understand. I'm accused of that all the time. So tell our listeners about that.
What I mean by that is all the people in the audience here are believers and very knowledgeable already, and not that they can't benefit from additional knowledge, but I think the general populace needs to become aware of this whole phenomena of UFOs and ETs. And which is why I wrote my book, and which is why I put it in a fictional format, so that the average person would not be threatened by reading it.
Now, you're right. It's a science fiction novel.
Yes.
But as we talked about, by the way, you got a very nice publisher, Wendy.
Yes.
Was telling me a little bit about you and your book, and we've heard about you before, of course. Tell me how this book is set, fiction-wise, and then how it relates to facts.
Okay. Well, the story, the fictional part of the book, is a story that revolves around an alien artifact that was found at a UFO crash in Kingman, Arizona in 1953. The crash of the UFO in 1953 is pretty well documented. The artifact is the fictional part. But the artifact was discovered by the captain who was overseeing the recovery of the craft. He recognized how important it was, more important than the craft itself, and he kept it hidden on his person all his life. And so we jump forward in the book to present day, where he is now a retired general dying of cancer, and he's been following the UFO scene all his life, and he's concerned about stories coming back or being told by people who were abducted that the aliens are about to make their presence known. So, of course, he sees this as a threat, being a military person, so he goes to the President of the United States and gives him the artifact, explains the situation. The President then forms, charges a colonel to form a research group, which consists of two scientists, actually, Wendy Ahern, who is the lead scientist, a linguist, and Dr. Corey Newton, who is an astrophysicist. And they're taken to the secret base to try and unlock the secrets of this artifact, which today we'd call a Palm Pilot. In 53, they didn't know such a thing existed. And so he thought, the captain at the time, thought it was the logbook of the craft.
And hence the name Alien Log.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about this actual crash in Kingman in 1953. A lot of people don't know about that.
I know. They know about Roswell.
Wendell Stevens once told me that he knew of at least 10 crashes in Arizona altogether.
I talked to Wendell personally for about 45 minutes to get more information on this crash. And in fact, on one of my visits out this way, I was in Laughlin, Nevada at the time, I actually drove to where I think the crash site is, which is about 10 miles north of the Kingman Airport. I wanted to get the lay of the land, so when I described some of the events in my book, I had the terrain laid out correctly. I tried to be as accurate as I could with all the evidence and scientific information that I give in my book.
10 miles north of the airport in Kingman, what exactly happened there? Was something recovered, or?
Yes, a UFO apparently crashed and was recovered and taken someplace. Some people today think maybe that's Area 51.
What did you do any research while you were there in Kingman, or just take a look at the place, get a lay of the land?
I didn't have time to actually spend much time doing research there. I just mostly got the lay of the land. I took my GPS with me, so I had the coordinates on a map and everything.
I go to the conference in Laughlin. I wish I'd known you were going up there. I'd gone with you with a recorder. That would have been fun.
That's the one I was at, as a matter of fact.
Yes. And now, any ETs or alien beings in this crash that you know of?
I'm not sure. I don't know of them, put it that way.
Yeah, right. This was probably a typical saucer type
craft. Yes, it was.
You know, it's interesting that all of this things happened 4752. Of course, you had all of the things flying over the capital of Washington, D.C., and 53, this crash.
Yes.
Lots of activity back in that time frame. Not that there's not now. We just had a report the other day on our UFO Files show about a sighting near Kingman, as a matter of fact. So they're still showing up.
Yeah. One of the things that's intrigued me, and actually it didn't occur to me until after I finished the book, and I asked the question here at the conference, and I'm not sure I got the answer that I was looking for, but the question that I posed was, these UFOs, with all their sophistication, being built by probably a civilization that's a million years technically more advanced than us, why are they crashing? How can such a craft that's as beautiful and does the things that it does crash? So that was one question I asked. And I'm researching that, by the way.
Well, I've always assumed that these early crashes, 47, mm-hmm. 52, 53, had something to do with the radar we used at the time.
I think you're right. I think that's what I'm finding out. Some may be due to lightning strikes, but take the Kingman crash, for instance. That was in May 20th, 1953. And they don't have a lot of lightning storms in Kingman that time of year.
No, they don't. And I understand that the radar they're using, especially in 47, probably still in 53, was a very kind of microwave oven.
Yeah, actually, when you read my book, Corey, who is the astrophysicist and very interested in UFOs, almost to the detriment of his career, but at one point in the book, the colonel who's in charge of the program, standing next to this crashed UFO in this secret base and asking him some questions about how it works. And Corey describes how it's worked by gravity, and he talks about how he feels that somehow they've learned to manipulate electromagnetic fields to create or distort gravitational fields. Now, if that's true, then electromagnetic fields like microwave radiation might disrupt their drive systems. And except for the crash in Kingman, which may not be related to radar, other than the fact that I discovered that there's a place called Radar Hill in Kingman, and that also that some research was done in the late 50s, and I'm not sure whether it goes into 53 or not, on developing radar that was used in the Dew Line.
And they were testing it there or something?
I'm not sure. That's what I'm researching. That's where I'm at now.
Maybe one of our listeners at home, they can contact you. We have a link on our website at jerrypippin.com over there on the UFO Files, and we will have your email address probably. If they can find it, they can probably talk to you.
Yes, they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alien Log is the name of the book. Our guest is Robert Farrell. You're listening to the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're here at Sunset Station in Las Vegas, Nevada. Robert, tell me a little bit about your background. How'd you get interested in this?
Well, I think as long as I know, I've been interested in this. My background is a technical background. I have a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and a master's in business, and then I have a doctorate in plastics engineering. But I've always been close to the sciences, astronomy and biology, and those. I've always had an interest in them. And I've always been fascinated by the whole UFO subject. And it was when I, years ago, became convinced through logic, basically, that they exist, that I began doing serious research that led to this book.
Now, you talked about you have a doctorate in plastics research and things like that. You heard about this magic or memory metal supposedly recovered from one of these craft? And
Oh, yes.
Yeah. What do you think that could be?
I don't know. It strikes me, it sounds a lot like Mylar, you know, that's,
yes,
that's been coated with a metallized Mylar. That's what it. That's what I visualize when the people describe it. Whether that's what it is or not, I don't know. You know, you hear stories about, like Corso was talking about how things were reverse engineered from things that they recovered from these craft, and that it was fed to industry to let them invent it. That maybe that led to Mylar. I don't know.
It's definitely a possibility. I think a lot of that, we don't really have explanations of how we suddenly come up with some of these things we are using these days.
Right.
And some of it even as basic as the computer. You talk to computer people, I have a hard time ever getting a complete explanation of how it works.
Well, that's true.
So who knows? This truth is stranger than fiction a lot of times. What is your feeling about these craft in the alien log? Are these entities from some place specific, or do you get into that?
Yes, I do. I get into, first of all, just like me, Corey, one of the characters in the story, is asked, has he ever seen UFOs? And he says no. And the colonel says, well, then why do you believe in them? And he says, well, I came to a logical conclusion that they exist. So he launches into a discussion about that that starts with the Big Bang and works all the way down. and Wendy, who happens to be an expert in the Sumerian culture, is listening to all this, of course. And one of the things that Corey mentions is these things called planetoids, which are planets that form without suns, and they may or may not have moons, and they wander around through the galaxy and periodically get captured by stars. And so she's thinking about this, and up till now she's thinking that one of the stories that the Sumerians had about how the solar system formed and going back 4 billion years ago was just a myth. But then when Corey talks about the planetoids, now she thinks maybe there's something to this, because the Sumerians believed there was a tenth planet called Nibiru that had moons, and it was brought in, you know, attracted into our solar system. And so there's a big discussion, a whole chapter on the Sumerian, what they knew through Wendy.
Yeah, that's been, you know, a question and conversation for some time. Some of it, there may be some truth to it. That's, you know, a planetoid basically would be the same as a spaceship. Carrying something from one solar system to another, or one area of the galaxy to another, with DNA, et cetera, et cetera, and who knows how life forms.
That's right.
And well, it could be as simple as somebody on that planetoid, a subterranean species or whatever.
Right. The Nibiru itself never actually was involved in any of the collisions with the planets. It was the moons that were primarily involved. But the point, I think, is that... first of all, how did this, and we're learning that a lot of the things that the Sumerians knew, like this extra planet and the effects that it had on our solar system, that a lot of these things are true, and it explains a lot of things that scientists are wrestling with even today, like why is there so much water on the planet Earth? And so that's one little piece of evidence that 6,000 years ago the Sumerians knew about all this. It's also interesting, Wendy goes on to point out that 6,000 years ago, the Sumerians had this understanding of how the Anunnaki descended to Earth from Nibiru, and how they genetically altered the Homo erectus, who existed in South Africa at the time, and created Adamus, which became Homo sapiens.
Yes.
And suddenly, Corey points out, you know what, there was a paper presented in 1986 by some researchers in the University of California talking about a study using mitochondrial DNA, and they traced back through the mutation process that the first Eve appeared in South Africa 200,000 years ago. So that's another fact that the Sumerians knew about that is confirmed. Excuse me. And so Corey says, well, geez, if they're right about this and they're right about that, then maybe their story about the Anunnaki coming to this planet 450,000 years ago may be true, and maybe these aliens and these craft that we see today have been here for hundreds of thousands of years.
And there seems to be at least a hypothesis that has lots of information behind it, and it's becoming more and more acceptable that this may be the case.
Right. When I was writing the book, it was important to me to come to a conclusion as to whether the aliens were benevolent or not. And I came to the conclusion they were benevolent, and that they were actually, to some extent, protecting us, because there are probably other alien species in the galaxy. If you can come to a logical conclusion that there's one, probably there's many, perhaps millions of them, and some kind of an organization must be set up to keep everything in line.
We're talking with Robert Farrell, and the name of the book is Alien Log, and you can order this book. As I say, we have a link on the website. I imagine most bookstores can get a hold of this, too.
We're listed with Baker & Taylor, so if someone goes to the bookstore and that store doesn't have it, they can order it through Baker & Taylor.
Right. Baker & Taylor, of course, is a book distributor, and
yes.
All the independent bookstores use them.
Yes, and so do the libraries.
Yes. It's an interesting book, Alien Log. Is there a sequel to this?
I'm working on that now, as a matter of fact.
Somehow I kind of figured there probably would be.
Yes. When you get to the last chapter, you're going to realize there's got to be a sequel.
And you really, from talking with Wendy, I got the impression that you chose this venue to really get out some of the things that you really believe are true.
Yes. As I said earlier, I started writing this as nonfiction to explain this whole phenomenon. But I felt that most people would never go into the New Age section of Barnes & Noble to buy a book about UFOs, because that's where I find all these books. The people that my audience, my target audience, are people who would not do that. But they would go to the science fiction section and buy a book on science fiction.
Right, because all types of people like science fiction from every strata of life. So you'd reach, chance of touching whomever.
Right. And the other thing is, there's a lot of information in here that could be a information overload. And in fact, I had to take some out because it was becoming that way. But by putting it into a fictional story, it made it an easy read. And those are comments I get. It was an easy read. I couldn't put it down. But when I was done, I found myself going to the library, because in the back of my book, I have 72 references for further research.
Alien Log is the name of the book. Robert Farrell has been our guest. Benevolent. You think they're okay?
Yes, I do.
You don't
say there aren't some that perhaps aren't, but I'm hoping that the benevolent ones watch out for it.
Okay, thanks very much, Robert. It's a pleasure meeting you. And before you leave, I got to ask you, did you run across anybody in Kingman that knew anything about that UFO crash?
Interesting. When I got back, I live in Phoenix, and I was doing some research with my cell phone, marvelous invention.
Yes, it is.
And so I called the library there, asking for some information about the weather and everything in Kingman, Arizona in 1953. In May of 53, she referred me to another gentleman, which unfortunately I can't remember his name, and he called me back, and we were talking, and at the time I didn't tell him what I was.
Yes,
I didn't say anything about a crash and of UFOs, and he opened that subject up.
He did.
Yeah, so he was right on top of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Had he seen it or just heard about it?
He knew about it.
Yeah.
Apparently the people in Kingman are aware that such a thing happened.
Interesting. Thanks very much, Robert. Look forward to the sequel, too. The name of the book is A.N. Logan. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.